Hey, y'all, and welcome back to another episode of the Romantically Lit podcast featuring two undercover hopeless romantics who kiki as they review different Black romance novels from across the diaspora. Today, we're super, super excited to have our lovely guest here, Tomilola Adeyemo, to walk through one of our favorite books, I'm going to say, instantly, A Very Giddy Christmas. So welcome to the podcast, Tomilola.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm so happy to be here. My friend Nike, I put her onto you guys, and she was so excited when she found out I was coming here. She was like, oh my God, say hi to them when you get there. So first things first, my friend Nike Fagwe said that she say hi to you guys. She's such a
hit. Oh, really? Well, thank you. And hello to her. And that she's enjoying the podcast. Yeah. It's so strange personally for me. I always don't think I know somebody's listening, but I don't ever think we're gonna hear anybody listening. So even when you said you watched it, I was like, what does she think about it?
Yeah.
No, I was watching you guys. I was listening and I was watching as well. Yeah.
Oh my God. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess to start, so you obviously wrote a Christmas book. What about Christmas in Lagos? What made you be like, I need to encompass this season within a book?
So first things first, us Nigerians are festive, regardless of, what festivity it is. Because, Nigeria is such a multi religious country, and we have so many people practicing different religions, different faiths, and all of that, but we're a party people. So as it is with a lot of Africans, right, anything we do has to shout and let them know that we're there. We're very expressive and all that. So it was just me wanting to write something festive. I mean, this is as far back as 2020. I used to be an indie romance author, and I just only used to publish via EPUB ebook platforms. Right. At the time, I wanted to do something for the first time, Christmassy, what would that be like and all that, because I'm Christian and I'm Yoruba as well. I'm in the Yoruba tribe. The thing is, we always have, sometimes you have you have families where they practice at least two religions, right? Yoruba people are very accommodating and open in that sense, right? So you can have people who have parents and the mom is Muslim and the dad is Christian, or, the other around there. So because I come from, a very Christian background, obviously it was going to be Christmas. And I wanted to do that. I wanted to see how that was going to be. The title came to me first, actually, because I also wanted it to be very Nigerian. Mm-hmm. I wanted you to pick it up and know, oh, this is about Nigeria and all of that, right? It's about Lagos, definitely. So that's what it was. It was not anything more than that. And here we are.
Perfect. Were there any books or songs or authers that sort of inspired you in terms of the writing process for A Very Giddy Christmas?
Yes, tons. But I'm a creative, and I started out my career in Nollywood, actually, in 2000.
Really?
Yeah. I like to say 2013, because that's when I wrote my first ever professional screenplay and got paid for it. So I started screenplay at Study Dramatic Arts at the Obafemi Awolowo University in Nigeria, which is the best university in Nigeria. That's what I said, so. Has to be.
Okay.
Yeah. And after that, I've taken some courses because I majored in playwriting, but I'd also taken some courses, I had a diploma in screenwriting in a school here in Lagos. And after that, I said to work in Nollywood, intern, pay my dues as much as I could and all that. So I started that, and then after a while I transitioned into this. So as a creative, I've explored different parts of my career. Currently now, I work in social marketing. I do a lot of content, content marketing and all of that, right? So I'm inspired by different things as a creative. It's not just one thing. So I'll be dishonest if I said it was this book or these books or these authors, when in all honesty, it's different, people in different aspects of it. But I'm very big on music. I love hip hop music from the 90s up until the early to mid 2000s era. I'm a stereotypical millennial in that sense. I really love R&B and hip hop music from that time. Obviously, the Blacker, the music, you'll see me there. And obviously, I love real things. I listen to a lot of high life music here. I listen to a lot of Afrobeats, obviously, because I'm Nigerian. I listen to a lot of Afrobeats, as you know, Fela Nicola Pokuti as well. Those are naturally like my influences. Right now, I'm such a huge fan of Margaret Atwood. I've been reading like, and I can't get enough. She's absolutely like divine. I'm in love and obsessed. You know, like I'm also like a huge fan of Sefi Ata, who is a Nigerian author. I don't know if you guys have heard of her. But she's an OG, like they say, and her work also inspires me. I'm inspired by Shonda Rhimes. As I said, you know, it's not just one, yeah. So it's a whole lot of stuff like that.
Okay.
We definitely saw the 90s R&B and hip hop influence in the book. Little songs you put in. But now I'm interested to know, like, what are the names of the Nollywood films you worked on or wrote scripts for, so we can like go back and watch it?
Okay, Delia. Let me pick the ones that won't embarrass me. okay, before you guys watch and you're like, oh, okay, I thought she could write. Well, I guess. Okay, but I did like a lot of TV actually, because when I started out, I was very lucky, very blessed to be starting out, you know, around that time where Nollywood was having some sort of reshaping and restructuring, especially like, you know, in the creative side. So I was like in writers' rooms. I wrote on some really popular shows at the time. So I wrote on Mnet's Hush. Hush is a very popular show produced by Mnet. Yeah, Mnet is, you know, a very big network here. They aired on DSTV. For I think from 2015 to 2016, then I worked on something called Forbidding. I wrote and I was a researcher on MTV Sugar Naija season 4.
That my mom loves that show, by the way.
Oh my god, love.
Yeah, that was on YouTube. Yeah. And I also associate produced the first Big Brother Naija documentary. I wrote that as well, actually. Yeah. I recently wrote a YA show, you know, sometimes last year up until now, I was head writer on that and everything. So I've done more work in TV, as you may have noticed, than I have in film. Yeah. I've written some made for TV films as well on like local channels here as well. Yeah. You know, romances and obviously some comedies. I love comedies. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Absolutely.
I'm definitely going to say that I think now, knowing like the background with like the screenwriting experience that you have, when I was reading this book, I was telling Odilia, it feels like I was watching scene after scene. I don't know. Yeah. It was so entertaining. Like, it's definitely one of those books I'm just like, I'm going to keep this one forever because there's just so many scenes in there. So you definitely tapped into like, you wore that hat when it comes to like writing this book as well, right? Yeah.
Absolutely, yes, I 100% did. And this is, I mean, that was also intentional, by the way, the Nollywood side, because while I was, so in the very early stages of writing, sometimes writing can be very lonely when you're writing a book. So sometimes it's just you and like your mind. And when I started writing fiction and when I had the balls to share it with the world, I used to have like an audience and a following, and I'll blog them weekly, you know. So like I had like an audience following like in real time, who would sometimes say, oh, I hate this character, I love this character, I can't wait to see. And sometimes, you know, while I don't necessarily allow people to get into my head, that also makes you see like, oh, this is how people are seeing them in real time. And that used to help. But, you know, like as I became, you know, the kind of writer that I currently am, I started writing, you know, a bit more. And, you know, one of the things that the very first person who ever read and gave me feedback, shout out to her, Ore. She has, she's a book influencer as well and all that. And Ore had said to me like, oh, I think you should give them something that they both share, you know, some sort of thing that is theirs. And Nollywood was just an easy pick. So I'm such a Nollywood head. I was a huge fan of Nollywood before I started writing in Nollywood. And I'm a Nollywood fangirl. I know Nollywood pop culture like the back of my hand. So like that was so easy, right? And they're millennials. It's second chance love romance, which meant that, you know, at the time when I was around that age, they also would have been fans of those things if they were fans of Nollywood. So it was easy to just go back and just, you know, like plug into that. So yeah, that was just me cheating and looking for an easy way out there as well.
Yeah, we definitely got that influence when reading the book, because it was all over the pages. I say, like, I know where it's
from. Yeah, I heard you. I think you'd mentioned like Kole Remy as well when you were talking about, like, you know, some of the characters. Yeah. Saying, listen, guys, you think I'm joking?
No, oh, I think it's just because we forget that sometimes, like, we're just having a conversation. Yeah. We forget that we've chosen to put it out into the world and people have heard our little conversations.
I was listening and following.
Okay, well, with that aspect, obviously, I think you mentioned, Hana, too, the book is so very much Nigerian. Was there any, like, trepidations in doing that, or, like, push to have that authenticity, especially in hopes of, like, maybe having non-Nigerians listen to it or a global audience? Or was it just, this is for myself, for people like me, and if you get it, you get it. If you don't, you don't.
I was waiting for this question because, like, I remember when I was listening, like, there were so many times that I heard you guys, like, say stuff like, oh, Tommy Lola is just saying, if you get it, you get it. If you don't, you don't. And that wasn't necessarily, like, intentional. So one of the things, one of the rules that I live by as a creative is, you know, just be authentic. The rest of the world will catch up. We've seen language shows and films travel so far and wide and be accepted. And people don't even know what they're saying. I watch K-drama and I don't know what they're saying, but I'm just reading the subs and I'm like, it's a girl. Oh my gosh, Paran, oh God, he's so hot, handsome. Whoa. And, you know, like, I'm such a billionaire. Wow. Like, do it for all the girlies in the world. And I can relate to, like, the emotions, you know, the of love, of pain, of joy, and all that. So I don't let that stifle me or chain me or hold me back. I just do that. And because I remember that one of the first notes my editor had given me was the opening line. The opening line says, it's a truth universally acknowledged that a Nigerian without a decent paying job is frolicking with Sapa. Sapa means poverty. And she had first, like, written, like, crossed it out and written a note and put poverty. And I said no. And we had this meeting. We picked another word. It was sufferhead we picked. And then while I was going through, again, during one of the numerous edits, you know, I'd realized that sufferhead usually is something you self-inflict, you know, or something that has happened to you. Like, you know, it's literal in that sense. Like, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. But poverty is not necessarily something you self-inflict. You know, people work hard and just, you know, sometimes just to make money, because a lot of things are working against, you know, you, the system, you know, economic, whatever, you know, So I was like, I want Sapa back. And then we had, like, this back and forth. We had these conversations about it, and I was like, you know what, no, Sapa would be there. I'd admit, though, it's a good time to be Nigerian in the entertainment sense, because Afrobeats is traveling so far and it's very Nigerian pop culture with it. And I remember that there was a time I was in South Africa, and one of my South African colleagues at the time had found out what Shayo meant, because they loved Burna Boy. And they didn't know, they were just always singing Anidigbo and Shayo, and they didn't know what that meant. So, like, one day we were just randomly having, like, a conversation, like, us Nigerians, and they found out that Shayo meant liquor and Igbo meant weed. And they were like, oh my gosh, that's what it means. I didn't know that, right? So basically, it was also me hoping that people can, you know, people who enjoy Nigerian stuff can be curious enough to go and find out. So, like, some bits of that, yes, that was me saying, you know what, just figure it out. Other parts weren't necessarily intentional, as much as it was just me trying to be as authentic as possible and not feel the need to explain. Some of these things I did explain, and my editor came back and I just trimmed it out. Like, no, girl, we're not explaining this one. So, like, I mean, the Biodun thing, for instance, I had put that entire thing there and it came back and it just wasn't there anymore. So it was, I think it was like a mix of both. But you guys did so well with it. You know what it was about. You were so,
I think it's just from, like, because like I'm just gonna say, like, Nigerian culture is very universal at this point. Like, if you like, you have to, everybody across the world has to like have some sort of like integration, whether it's with Afrobeats, whether it's the movies. So I think some of the stuff I knew, because like I used to watch a lot of different Nollywood films. I was like, oh yeah, I'm picking up on this. And then the only thing I didn't understand, I think, was just like the love letter that Kunle left her. Like, oh, yeah, I was like, I have to Google this. I said, I don't know what that last part is.
Sorry,
Odila, did you say something?
No, I just say, and Google Translate also did not help at that point. They said, figure it out.
Google Translate is so hilarious. Like, I was raised on the Yoruba language, actually. My parents did not raise us with English. We learned all that English in school. And so, and my parents come from two different places in Yoruba land, and they are also like accents that sound differently, and some of the Ingo are different. So for instance, they could call certain things, like for instance, broom is called something different in my father's side and something entirely different in my mom's side. So like, that's how I grew up. You know, I learned to speak English as a second language. So yeah, Yoruba naturally, like I can't, it's just who I am. So I tend to do that, especially if I've created that world where I'm like, this is who these people are. And yes, but I thought you guys did well. But Okwe Atata actually means your darling husband. So it means your husband. That's what it was. So when I heard that part, I laughed so hard. Like, guys, no, Google Translate. Google Translate is the funniest thing. Yeah. Like, sometimes for fun. For fun, I check stuff there. Maybe I'm writing something and I'm like, well, just to be double sure, I go on Google Translate and I have a good laugh.
Yeah.
Google Translate is hilarious.
It is. So we were, I was like, this is not, I, when I saw the translator, I said, this is not what, I don't think it's what she meant.
I think it even, it translated husband and then it just stopped.
Yeah, and it just stopped. Like, okay.
Probably was like, can't be bothered. I don't know what the other thing is, guys.
All I know is it's going to be sweet. I just knew it was going to be very sweet. I was like, it's probably really nice. Yeah. Okay.
And like Kana, Kana was saying, like, I feel like prior to even Afrobeats having its big boom, I think as Africans, like, you guys call yourselves the African Giants, like, you know, as much as we don't want to admit it, there is some truth to it, right? Like, most of us in English-speaking countries grew up on, I've seen Nollywood movies translated to French, so, like, I think across the continent, we were watching those movies before it, you know, listening to the music before it became like, this global phenomenon. And of course, there's a similarity in culture and like attitude. So it translates a little easier. But Hannah, please go ahead.
Yeah, I was like echoing that. Just, I could definitely like, it felt very relatable as well. I think it's one of the things when it comes to like reading books like this or even watching shows, is that it's a human experience that's very universal. So anyone can relate to everything that's going on in the book, which I really do like. I do have a question about one of the central themes, which is around classism, which is something that is so, I'm going to say just for us Africans, it's very prominent in our communities, unfortunately. How important, so why are you writing the book? Listen. So when you were writing the book, was that like a purpose message that you wanted to pass on to your readers about like the classism between in Nigeria or like in the continent generally, or is it something that just, you just fell into?
To be honest, I think it was, so a lot of things were intentional, right? Because I'm just like, you know, that kind of writer. And I'm not, you know, some people are really great with piecing, you know, words together, saying something in such a concise, beautiful way, and being able to like write articles out of it, or, you know, tweet about it as stuff is happening in real time. Like, oh, I can have an opinion about the Palestinian war and say, oh, this is a genocide, and be able to put it together, you know, like, well, or, you know, the situation in America or whatever is happening in Nigeria, and have never really been good with stuff like that. That's not where my talents lie. But like, one thing I've always actually been able to do though, is be able to weave that into whatever story that I am telling as much as I can. So in this case, it was very intentional. What I wanted to do was, I tell people all the time, a lot of billionaires, and I say a lot of because, you know, I've not married my billionaire husband yet, and I don't know if I would identify a good person when I do. But tomorrow and be like, I thought she said billionaires were not good people. I'm the good one there, guys. I believe a lot of billionaires like cross morally gray lines. Like they it's not in black and white. You know, they do bad things, right? As my dream husband Trevor Noah said on his podcast one day, billionaires are not good people. So yeah, for me, if you're going to write about something, even if it's romance or whatever you're writing, you have to acknowledge. Now I'm not necessarily writing a book about, you know, the political landscape in Nigeria. I'm so sorry, that's not my business. I'm not here for that. I'm here for a good time. And but at the same time, you're also not going to create characters and act like you don't know that that's the reality. That's just dishonest. So like the reality here is that, you know, when you're a wealthy person, you know, yeah, there's some things you've done, you know, there's some things you, yeah. So for me, that was intentional. And, you know, as you said, you know, it's, classism is a thing in Africa because of how the entire thing is skewed, you know, and Nigeria is such a capitalist society, you know, like we have like maybe 3 billionaires who are so billionaire, they've carried their business outside of the continent and they're like in fault. You know, globally, people are talking about how rich this person is, and the average Nigerian is in abject poverty. So it's a thing; it's our reality. Yeah. So you're not going to create, you know, you're not going to write a billionaire romance and not acknowledge that in the tiniest, you know, way possible, and all of that. So that was absolutely intentional, 100%. Yeah, I wasn't intending to delve into it and just sleep there, as my people would say. But I also wanted it to be obvious. You know, like that's a thing, you know, like, and that's if you then create 2 characters, one of them is struggling to pay rent even though she works so hard. You know, the other person is not lazy either. You know, he's also working. But let's be for real. Yeah, this is our reality. Yeah.
Absolutely.
With that being said, because you mentioned it, how was my girl BG able to dodge her landlord for 9 months? That's crazy.
Like when I listen, I laughed out loud because I heard like that's an entire gestational period. Yes. I could not believe it. I laughed out loud. I'm sorry, is any of you Nigerian? Are you Nigerian? Because moments I was like, oh my goodness, but you guys are so good with it.
No, I'm Cameroonian and Hannah's from Uganda.
Oh, you're from where?
Uganda. Oh, Cameroon, and I'm Ugandan.
Oh, wait, isn't Cameroon like, isn't the first language, like your main language there, French?
I think that's the part everybody gets confused from. There's an English side and a French side. So French is the predominant language, but my family's from the Anglophone side. The Anglophone side is a side that's kind of closer to, I guess, like Southern Nigeria.
Okay. That's cool. So you speak French?
No, I'm trying to, though. Me and French have a love-hate relationship. Like, it's almost abusive. Like, I love her, and I want to be with her so bad, but she don't want to be with me. Like, we had a pause. I'm back to Duolingo now. My parents both speak French, though. They grew up in a time where most of the universities there, you had to speak French to go to university. My dad actually went to school in Nigeria, but yeah, but I'm trying to, me and French, we're going to get together one day. We're going to make this marriage work.
Any French I use with my mouth, like I kiss French, that's it. I do not speak French of any kind. Yeah. I'm so sorry, what was the question? I think I lost.
How was she able to dodge Papa Jennifer for 9 years?
I think that, so in Nigeria, right, I don't know how we like, you know, works in like other African countries, but like Nigeria is such a peculiar place, and there's a running joke on Twitter where people will say, if someone explains Nigeria to you and you understand, they didn't explain it well. Nigeria is a crazy place. Things just happen, and like it's a lot of it, because as a people, we're also funny, and we like to think ourselves as, you know, this compelling, you know, comedians or something, and like we laugh a lot through the pain. I mean, even the great fella had a song called Suffering and Smiling. It's a thing that we do, yeah. Because it's a lot of trauma, and, you know, maybe it's trauma response, so, you know, how we, like, you know, navigate the pain. But, like, yeah, a lot of things do happen that when you write it, it might just seem like that's literally not possible. But yeah, I don't know. I think for me, like when I first wrote that, because I know people who have owed their landlords, like, I mean, yeah, I haven't done that. I have not, because I could not. I don't know how to run or do that, right? But like, I know some people have done that. And yeah. Usually when it comes to that point, it's like, see, I don't have it. And there's nothing you can do about it. You're either going to give me some time or not. And they'll come home. I mean, obviously, trying to be more sensible is even, you know, why he was written that way. Because there are people who live in houses here and don't pay rent. And they greet their landlords when they're going in and out. And, you know, nothing can happen, right? I think there's even a law that allows... that insists that you wait for a period of time or whatever, right? I know rents are paid here annually. So it could also be a case of if your rent is due in March, maybe you're saying, please give me some more time. Sometimes it's that kind of conversation that is being had. And like, oh, give me some time, you know, yeah. And she's just 9 months late. Oh gosh, I've seen years.
Years?
Oh yeah, there are years. Yeah.
What? Yes. You know what's funny? After we read it, and I started going on a bit of a Nollywood binge, and like for 3 or 4 movies, the characters started dodging their landlord. I was like, is this just like a normal thing that's happening currently? Like, guys, please.
It's a thing. People don't have money, so you know, sometimes and you know, it's what it is. So yeah. And the reality of life is there always gonna be bills, you have to eat.
Yeah,
you know, So it's Nigeria is a mess. Economically, and when you really look at it and you go, you know, you deep dive into it, you realize, you know, that this country has like, oh, this rich number of rich people, and everyone else is just like really, really struggling to figure it out. Then it just makes sense, because then how are people eating? How are they making rent? How are they able to do anything? It's actually like a thing.
Yeah, makes sense. I think when we were reading that part, because we're like, oh my gosh, she's dodging this, jumping up, hiding. I think we're just like comparing, like if that could never like happen here, like in a North American like environment. I think they will call the authorities immediately. After a year, they're like, no.
Not even a year. I think the landlord has like, if you miss like 3 months, they're like, okay, we're calling they have a landlord and tenant tribunal, and they will be serving you with a paper. The only thing is once they're doing the case, you can stay there.
Yeah.
But the minute that goes through, you need to get out, and the police will be involved. So to go a year is like, it's crazy. And then you won't be able to rent anywhere else, because everywhere else you go, they'll like pull it up that you've gone to the LP. So
ooh, nice.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. That's not what I think. I can't relate.
I think one of the questions we had as well is the character Oloye, so the politician. When infusing his character into the storyline, did you have a particular, you don't have to mention names, okay? I don't want us to get in trouble.
I kind of want to know names.
I don't have enough money to leave Nigeria yet. Because he thinks have a way of, you know, going viral and like, what, how dare she? It's such a like, there's so propaganda, a lot of craziness in the air right now. You say one thing, they're like, oh my gosh, she's so anti the ruling party. Somebody says Davido had said something recently while I think it was like on a podcast or something, and you know, was telling like African Americans, like, oh, there's no need to come to Nigeria, like, not, things are crazy. And that just became it. It was on major news channels, it was a political thing, everyone was just talking about it. So, you know,
we know it. That's, we don't want any smoke from people.
It's actually like the governor Oloye. Yes, those are people who are actually like they're off, you know, like the experiences, what will be, you know, everyone's collective experience as a Nigerian, you know, like people, a lot of politicians here are quite interesting, and they can be badly behaved, you know, in the way that they are, right? So it's what I was saying earlier, if you're going to write a story in a world, you have to address, you know, that. You don't have to dwell on it, but you have to acknowledge that, you know, these things happen. So yeah, I think people might read and feel like it reminds them of somebody or someone or whatever, but it just goes to show how true and, you know, how it is our everyday in reality here. you know, those kind of politicians. But absolutely, yes, you know, they are absolutely inspired by real situations, real politicians and all that.
Okay.
And also, maybe I shouldn't say this, but I don't fully disagree with what Davido said, maybe in a different lens than he is, because he's a billionaire. But as you know, as you guys, well, you know, it's December and there's a lot of people coming, and you guys have made yourself a touristic attraction during this month. You know, absolutely. I personally don't want to see another, this is me getting my hair done for $2.50 video. Like, I don't want to see another one.
I'm going to get them whether you like it or not.
This is how I was bargaining with this woman who's making less than the equivalent of a dollar a day to pay less than 50 cents. Like, it's kind of crazy. And there is already, not to say people shouldn't go home or travel or whatever, but there is a sense of like, if the economy is already bad as it is, you coming here and then making it worse is not good for the people who already live there. So,
Davido's uncle is a sitting governor in one of the states in the country, and his dad is a billionaire. So some of these conversations, when you have them, naturally there would be those other kind of conversations as well. Like, people would respond to that, because, you know, a lot of conversations around it have been, oh, your uncle, because not just his uncle, I think maybe his granddad or another one of his uncles had also been a sitting ruling governor, like, in some republic, maybe the third republic or something. So I think some of it is also interesting, very rich of that coming from you. What have your own people contributed in their own little way?
Exactly.
That they've held or that they currently hold. Yeah. So it's actually, which is why Nigeria is a political, it's crazy right now, this very period. It's like in my own entire life as an adult, like as anything, even as a child, but outside the military era period, which was gone by the time I was 10. But like, you know, as in the Fourth Republic, this is perhaps, you know, the craziest it's been, because, you know, the economy is crazy. Everything is, things are really expensive. People are suffering and going through it. So yeah, any small thing that happens now when you come on Nigerian Twitter, it easily becomes political. So yeah, I guess it's that. But we're also a political people. So
I mean, I feel like everybody has to be political to a certain extent, no matter the, you know, where you are in the world. But I mean, I get it, because you can, in certain parts you can. Let me not say that, because before you logged on, Hannah and I were talking about how expensive buying even a cucumber is here in Canada. Like, so. But I think now, because when the economy is bad, then everything really does become political, because you're like, well, now we can't even eat, you know, let alone the other things.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, prayers to everybody. That's all I have at this point. That is all I have. literally, I can't. I mean, I have other ideas, but if they say it, they'll say I'm a revolutionary.
Let's not call you names.
Yeah, I don't want the Canadian security people to come to my mom's house.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to get by.
Yeah.
But back to the book. So in that case, another question that I had was, for 12 years, they did not speak to each other. Did he not know that she was an OAP at Real FM? Like, was he tuning in privately in the car? Like, she's so funny. Or like, did he really not know till the acquisition?
You know, like, so in an earlier draft of this book, she wasn't an on-air personality. And he had like a severe commitment issue, you know, case, like he could not commit because of some of the things that he'd seen with his parents and all that, you know, like the trauma from childhood and all of that. And part of the reasons he hadn't gone was the fear of what it would mean when he reconnects with her. And I think that in a way that is still here, like that's the fear of what could be. Because, you know, like when we talk about like love, like affection, you know, in the real sense of it, like it's a lot of work. Yeah, it's not one thing or the other. It's a lot of things, right? You're here for the good times and the not good times, right? It could get ugly sometimes, messy. Sticking around is why, that's why like a lot of people would say, you know, love is a verb, because sticking around is you loving the person through whatever it is, right? Not just here for like the ice cream dates or the Netflix and chill or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I think that a part of it was actually like the fear of what, you know, could be, because the moment they are forced together, you know, in close proximity, you know, it becomes something, right? And what my guy wanted was just to become CEO and, you know, continue being the former irresponsible person that he was, and an ex-irresponsible man, former Yoruba demon, and just like
he's reformed.
We forgive him.
Life as a fine, you know, good guy, and all of that. Because one of my favorite lines to write in the book was a part where I think it was BG that had said something like he'd been said to be a some sort of bachelor, blah, 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 as if the women were supposed to do something about like his bachelorhood or something. So mm-hmm. like, yeah, like my guy just wanted to be like that, right? So I think like, yeah, for me, I think like a part of it was, if I make this call now, if I go there now, you know, am I ready for this? Because let's not forget, they were forced into this, and then they were forced to confront, you know, like feelings, past hurt, anger, and yeah. all of that, right? Yeah. So I think that's what it was like for him. I don't think that it was necessarily a conscious decision that he made for a particular reason or the other. And yeah. Okay.
I think one thing I like about these two characters, so of course, like, BG is, she's very resilient, let me tell you. She has the guts. I would have quit. Forget the dream. Forget the dreams. I need the money now. You know, the landlord's yeah. chasing me. But Kunle's character, I think like Odile and I, with our like dating experiences, we've always like, you know, we've dated a lot of African men as well. And I know that like there's this
Nigerian stereotype. Men.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Why do you look like that? Like, the Nigerian yeah. men are,
you know,
yeah. you know, men are bad everywhere.
Yeah, let's just put a generic.
Men yeah. across the board are bad. Okay.
Yeah.
No matter, as long as you are a man, you are bad. Like, yeah. sorry, until you're proven innocent.
You need to do tested to figure out if you can pass each test, right? Yeah. And so when we were done reading the book, we're just thinking about Kunle's character in particular, who's described as very, how you showcase him is very soft, very sensitive. Even like his mom would be like, you've always been so sensitive. You know what I mean? Like you always take these things very emotionally. So how important was it for you to write a Nigerian reformed demon, Yoruba demon, into this fantastic, amazing man who's supportive, compassionate, and just really learn from his mistakes? Like what message were you trying to send to your audience with that type of character development?
I think someone sent me interview questions recently and asked me why was it important to make him imperfect before he was perfect. And my first response, like always, yeah. to that is perfect characters yeah. are perfect, right? No one cares about like, you know, a well done. Why am I following? Why so I'm on the journey if he's not going to make mistakes and be right. human? Learn from them, right? But like to really answer your question, I think that while I'm kind of like in the business of escapism, and you know, some of this can be fantastical sometimes, because let's face it, what billionaire person is going to marry a girl that's a migrant? So at the same time, I think that it's also, I'm not trying to create the ideal man, but like I'm trying to create, you know, perhaps ideal situations. A lot of writers write from like their trauma or like things they've been through. And I personally write from, I started writing romance, love stories from, you know, the world around me did not feel right. I grew up around a lot of dysfunctional relationships, marriages, you know, the men were just not acting right. Mm-hmm. And as a child, I would write stories where the men were acting right, you know, and they were doing their thing. But it was also important to not, you know, because it's very easy to create, you know, people create when they think of ideal situations, it just creates like unrealistic, you know, characters and people and things. And that was not it for me, because humans are flawed. So yeah, for me, which is important to say, you know, it's for younger me, for the me that, you know, saw that, or and for people who have experienced that, and that's like their reality, like, you can have this kind of situation, which is why it was important to create it in a world that was also realistic. You know, bills were not being paid, life is crazy, it's just chaos everywhere. Yeah. And you can relate with all of that, no matter where you are, anywhere in the world, no matter what the race is, right? You can relate with chaos and the fear of not being able to pay bills or being broke or whatever. And yeah, that was why it was important to put it in that world and, you know, create characters like that. And I said earlier that Nollywood really inspired me because I grew up watching Nollywood. You know, my mom had me very young. My mom had me literally like 4 weeks after her 21st birthday. So I came along like very early. And my mom is a twin. So, you know, they were still in that age where ideally we're still supposed to be figuring out themselves, right? Our twin sister was single for 6 more years after I came along, so I used to be with her like a lot, right? So part of the things that I first saw, you know, in my childhood was they would talk, and I'll be in the room, and they would talk about like the things that bothered them, and like, you know, they would just be, and I didn't understand some of those things until I grew older. I was like, man, those people were young, and like the conversations they would have, I'm like, oh, now I can relate. Oh, that was a really messed up situation. And like, they watch Nollywood films, and Nollywood was at its infancy, so to speak, at the time, because this was the very early 90s. And you know, I would watch all these Nollywood films where the men, some of them, you know, you watch some of them, the men would be so devoted and committed, and I'd hear them talk, I'm like, oh, Hasid is loving her and all that. So I knew that that was all we men wanted. I knew that that was what was ideal, to be committed and devoted in love. Like, when you love somebody, you would make mistakes, you'd hurt them, not on purpose, but you also like have to be doing it from an intentionally good place, you know, nothing malicious and not diminishing your partner. Yeah, so I that's my gospel. Men can be like this. This is a normal thing to be. You know how sometimes you read some works of art and you're like, this is pushing a problematic trope. Like, my own thing, I have an agenda. It's to say, you people can have sense. This is how to have sense. That was it.
Oh, perfect.
I'm going to start asking all of you romance writers, if you're going to write these people with sense as you speak, you have to start presenting real life options on Instagram for the rest of us to choose from.
And I find them out. After I choose mine, then I'll like, oh, you guys, oh, by the way, I found him. Now you can find yours at your closest supermarket or something.
You know, at some point, I think with every book, I'm like, oh my God, a woman wrote this. This is not real. It's not real right now. But I guess it is inspiring to be like, I felt that for Kunle. I was like, he seems attainable. Like, this is what the average man should be. And I'm not saying they are that, but this is what you all should aim for.
Right.
That's what it was.
Yeah. Right. And to the light of dysfunctional families, why did Kunle's parents never like explain this lore of his life, or I guess his brother's life, prior to him?
I don't know about your cultures, like your individual like cultures, but I tell you, like, the average Nigerian parents do not talk. They do not communicate. Like, it's a thing, right? I mean, as I grow older, let me say, some of these things I understand, because, you know, sometimes I'm like, I've had such a crazy day. I'm dealing with so much right now. And you know, when you're younger, sometimes it feels like a phase, like, oh, this will get, but sometimes, you know, some things just stay longer than you want them to. And I would make jokes about it. I'm like, thank God I don't have like a husband right now or children, because you had to confront real life as you're dealing with something else, like, at work, or life is life in, and the kids don't know that, so they just want their mom and they want their dad and all of that. So I started to really understand that, you know, they're not the villains in the story, it's just see, life is happening and I don't have time to be catering to this, right? Obviously, as I always would say, too, because us millennials, I grew up and saying, you know, we complain about, oh, this is traumatic. This one was triggering us, blah, blah, blah. I hope we also learn from that and become better parents. You know, like, let it not be that I cannot believe my dad and I never had these conversations or my mom was this way. You know, let it be that as we confront those things, we also make an effort to carry it on to the next generation and, you know, become better parents in the process. But Nigerian parents don't have time to, you know, many of them are like that. Like, I'm not going to have a conversation with you until I am forced to have this conversation with you. So, like, that's just, you know, like, how some of these things just go.
No, I definitely understood that, but there was a point where I was like, this Kunle's dad, you're just cool with your kid basically not talking to you. Like, he's 33 now. At some point, like 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32. You didn't want to have that conversation. You didn't want to be like, son, let's mend this bridge. No, you just have to wait for a lowly December when he decided to get married, be like, and now I shall explain how I married your
how we got here.
Things I killed her ex-husband. Come, son, let's have this conversation. Like, what are we talking about here?
Right.
At some point, and I get it, to be four is like, I like African parents, I understand, but again, like, we had so many years to where you can be like, okay, this person, he's fully grown now, his frontal lobe is developed, there are certain things he can understand, but like, no, he just chose to sit there, smoke and chill in Ibadan. Like, come on, man.
Yeah.
Not smoking and chilling in Ibadan. Well, I mean, I guess, like, it's what it was, like for that character. I try to not make too much sense sometimes of, you know, the reasons why some of these guys do some of this, right? Like, in my current work in progress, like, it's a completely different world. I mean, this is also something I've written before, just like it was with A Very Good Christmas, you know, something I rewrote and everything. And this one I'm not rewriting, more like, you know, expanding on the world and all of that. And, you know, like, there are part of this, because for me, those are like the recurrent themes and, you know, topics that I explore, you know, family background, spirituality, love, and, you know, and, you know, how traumatic experiences or the factors around our birth or our childhood form the people that we eventually become, and how we love and commit and, you know, eventually, like, become, you know, people who build families and all that. So, like, in this one, I'm not trying to, like, do too much of that and to say this is what was happening, this is how it is. And, like, for Kunle's father, you know, it was also some sort of, you know, how it was. But most importantly, it was for us to also be able to see, this is why this person is the way they are, like, our own main characters. This is why they are this way. This is where they come from. Ooh, that makes a lot of sense. I can understand why this person would, you know, do this. Or say, I think you'd mentioned earlier about how they were in Lagos together. She was on radio. You know, even if he wasn't listening to that channel every single day of his life, you know, he knew she was someplace, somewhere, and he didn't make that move. You know, I wonder where he got that from. So,
Okay. So you just mentioned that you are working on some other projects as well. So I want to ask, like, if it wasn't, it's probably going to be romance maybe, but of course, like, romance, I think, is just part of, like, every story naturally. But if you weren't writing romance, is there another genre that you would dive into at all? Mystery, horror? I'm just throwing some out.
So I like to write stuff with thriller elements because I like thrillers. Mm-hmm. I love sitcoms. I watch an unhealthy amount of sitcoms. I love comedy in all its forms. I mean, except slapstick. I really can't stand slapstick comedy, but I consume comedy anyhow, like stand-up, like sitcoms, dry humor, whatever. Like, I love because I think I'm so funny as well. So I like to you know, be goofy and put, you know, consume stuff that has wit and all of that. So I like to write comedies. Like, I could write stuff that's, you know, the romance might not be prevalent in it, but, you know, it would be, because I like, and comedies are challenging to write. It's easier to consume them. It's so easy for me to tell a joke by, like, you know, a particular platform or format, and you can laugh. But it takes a lot of work to get it there. And, you know, like when you're writing sitcoms, they would always say comedy comes from pain. So it's not funny to the person experiencing it, but it's funny to you, right? Yorubas have a saying, like in English, something like a bad situation goes hand in hand with humor, right? Mm-hmm. But like, it's in hindsight. It's not as you're dealing with it, like, oh, no, that's funny. But it wasn't funny in that period. So I like the challenging part of it because I like to challenge myself. So yeah, thriller, I have written things that had thriller elements and those come naturally to me because I consume dark romances once in a while as well. And, you know, because of a lot of them have like, you know, thriller elements or the whole suspense, you know, the suspenseful element to it. And I really love that. So yeah, I could try thriller. I don't know that I'll be really good at it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, and I try my best not to embarrass myself on purpose. I'm probably not also gonna write because as I'm writing, I'm probably going to be like, oh, this is an embarrassment. Why would I put that out there? So yeah, but I'll probably like do that. And maybe one day I'd also write something fully in Yoruba language. I want to do that.
What is the most surprising feedback you've gotten from the book since it's been out?
What's the most surprising one? I don't even think I've gotten any. I mean, people have been saying like interesting things, but like I think also because my romance writing journey didn't start with this book. Mm-hmm. I don't know, it takes a lot to surprise me at this point because I've heard things. So like, because I mean, this one is even a bit tamed, you know, like even with the sex scene, you know. Yeah. I wrote something last year called Sugar Daddy Chronicles. It was published like format, and I was in a really, really dark headspace. And when I'm like not in a great place, like the stuff I write are always a bit like dark, like a very what is going on here. So I still got like a comment about that one, like on my way here today, you know, when someone was talking about how like they liked it and, you know, read everything and all that, and that had thriller elements, it had spirituality, it was really dark, you know, it's erotica. I was supposed to be erotic from the very first paragraph. yeah so like I've heard things, women tell me things. Let me just say that. Women DM me things. Like, I would read it and I'm like, okay, that was inappropriate. But, okay, I'm glad you think you can be comfortable with me. But like, ooh, maybe not next time.
you can pen a good sex scene. Like, Han and I try not to go too...
Yes.
Into it on the podcast, we sometimes lose our heads, but definitely when we stop pressing record, we're like, we pulled out the book, we're like, okay, let's discuss this page right here. Like, we love this, this, like, yeah.
Nah, that's my thing. Nah, it has to be. It has to be actually one of the first, the first feedback I ever got back from the editor during like the edit process. Like, you know, she'd written me this entire whatever. It was there, like, this is one of the best sex scenes that I've read in like romance in a very long time. And I always take that, like, I love that particular feedback. And the reason why I consume a lot of romance as much as I write it. And the truth is that, you know, sometimes I'm like reading, I'm like, it puts flunga across the room. Flung? How is that body feeling? I'm saying flunga, and she also collects. How is she going to do that? Because if somebody flings me across the room, and then, you know, like, expects me to, can I get painkillers first? Please, you just flung me across the room. So, or like, you're like, oh, you know, they do something, there's this position, and in my head, I'm like, that's not realistic. Where's her leg? You know, like, this is not even correct. Like, where's the vagina? So, like, it could, like, arrest things that I'm like, oh, what's going on here? Like, this work. So like I always make sure that I write it as realistically as possible. For instance, when I knew I was going to put them in the shower for the first time, they were going to get intimate, it was also important for me to say, like, it can be hot, but it also can be tricky, you know, because, you know, it's not perfect, right? Yeah. And intimacy is not what makes it hot and good. It's not in the perfection of it. It's in the you and the other person and how you think. And usually your best sex, whatever, sometimes it's not even because the person is so great or you are so great. It's the both of you, you know, like coming together, you know, in that moment. So, and it's always very important for me to also know my characters first. And then I take, for instance, the very first scene with them together, I wrote that alone, like for like 2 days or something. Like that was the only thing I was writing. Mm-hmm. And whenever it was that I got to that point and I'm like, this doesn't make sense, I leave it alone. It doesn't matter what time of day it was, like it is rather. I leave it alone and I come back the next day and I continue and write. Like, so sometimes I write that only for an entire day because it's important for, so that it makes sense that Ekule would do this when they're making love. Yeah, that sort of thing, right?
Okay, we definitely enjoyed it. 100%.
I was like, oh my goodness, who is this person? Like, talking about?
No, we've read some things.
Yeah.
And also, like, we've lived on the internet our whole lives. Like, Wattpad exists, the things people were writing.
it was not for my age at that time, but no. I was reading it.
Oh, very real.
Very real. So, and we experience things, and like you said, it's always interesting when you read something, you're like, where is your hand supposed to be in this part? Like, why can't my body move like that? Like, that's very...
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. All right. I only have like two more questions left for you. I don't know if you have any more. The first question I have for you is your writing ritual. So I know you're working on other projects right now, and you talked very comprehensively about how you put your characters together. So do you have any like rituals that you follow? Like, do you, like when you're writing the scenes, like, do you like, you know, close the curtains, light a candle, and say it's time? It's time to write the chapter.
God's a 50%. No, I wish I could. Like, sometimes I try to like indulge like that, and I just write like half a page and skip off. For a very good Christmas in particular, the deadline was I was stressed. So there were times I'm like in an Uber and I'm writing on my phone and it's syncing with my Microsoft, whatever. And you know, like there are times that I'm like, if I don't write this now, I might not be able to do, you know, and scheduling my day and all that. And I was just figuring it out like that. So sometimes just don't have time for that. And sometimes, you know, like I just lie down like on my bed and I'm typing whenever the inspiration, when I say inspiration, it makes it seem like so fancy because, you know, sometimes inspiration doesn't. It, but deadlines are hidden, so like you have to but one thing I always try to do is set the mood, especially when I'm writing intimate scenes or scenes where my characters confront their emotions, or when I have the big declaration. I love me a big declaration. And my TV mom, you know, like, is the queen of that as well. Like, Shonda is she's so amazing with big declarations and everything. So like, that's my thing. I've watched all the big declarations in Bridgerton a billion times over and Queen Charlotte a billion times over. So I'm such a romance girly, like in that sense. So for stuff like that, those ones, I definitely have rituals for them, depending on the kind of story it is. So for this one, I was listening to a lot of Brandy. Come a Little Closer is one of my favorite songs of all time. So I listen to like a lot of songs with, you know, specific intentional whatever, because you know us creatives, we say we borrow, we steal from different whatever. So I like how that made me feel. I want to recreate the emotion but through words in the confines of the story that I'm telling. So if I want Kunle to be able to sound like this, because, you know, imagine if you read that entire book and got to his big declaration or he says something and you're like, that doesn't sound like what this character you've told me to say. So like, it's important. So I listen to different kind of songs depending on the kind of story it is. I wrote something for, that was a submission for Brittle Paper. It's called Efun's Jazz. Efun's Jazz was written like in 2022 and published a 6-part romance. And for that, it was very spiritual. So the kind of music I listened to were more traditional Yoruba songs, which I really love traditional Yoruba songs. And that's what it was, you know, at the time. So, like, for stuff like that, that can be intentional, you know, music. are maybe kind of stuff I watch. For this one, I was watching a lot of rom-coms, like again. This was while I was writing A Very Good Christmas, so editing, sorry, that was when I read Tia Williams's 7 Days in June, which was such a wonderfully written book.
Yeah.
Good. I was like, Shane, yeah. When earlier we were talking, I was like, well, that's how I felt about Shane. Like, what do you mean you're writing me this man? And like, you're not telling me where to find him. At the end of the book, you should visit your nearest.
At least one episode without mentioning them. Like, please.
I'm so sorry. Beautiful love stories, you know, like I've ever read. And that, yeah. So, like, I read that as well, and you know, I liked the intensity of that, and I wanted to reciprocate that in one way or the other. So in that way, yes, there are rituals, you know, for that. But like writing in particular, like from beginning to the end, you know, good coffee has to be strong. Yeah. One of my favorite places to write, I have to be there or something or not. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the noises are outside, you just have to write, you know. So yeah, for that one, not necessarily.
Thank you for mentioning Shane, because we love 7 Days.
Thank you for letting me mention Shane. I was going to mention him before the end of this interview. You could have asked me about water, and I'll be like, you know, I was the other time I read 7 Days in June, and I was thirsty, and Shane would just come up.
No, I love Shane. I'm gonna leave it at that. I just love Shane so much.
We love Shane. I guess like my last question for you is, because now we know that you have that screenwriting background. So for a Very Giddy Christmas, would you want to adapt this into the screen? So like a film, a movie, and like who would you cast as your main characters as well?
Oh my goodness. My friend Nika is going to hate that you guys make me do this, because she there's like this running joke where she's like, stop just designing things on Canva and throwing random people in there. I can't just do what I want. What are you talking about? I don't need to like think about budgets. This is just fantasy. But yeah, I think what always makes people like confused about me when they ask me these questions, or like they say stuff like, oh, I can imagine you must do this, is because I always just don't say, oh yeah, it must be a film. Because maybe because I'm coming from Nollywood, right? I understand the actual reality, like what it means to make a film, no matter how small that film is. Nollywood is also, interestingly, right now there are conversations around like investors, big investors pulling out, what the fate of the industry is and all of that. Mm-hmm. And it's not exactly the easiest terrain to be a creative or to create anything. So for me, aside to that, I'm a huge fan of arts existing in its form and enjoying that. Also, I'm a very spiritual person. I believe in time. Mm-hmm. You know, like if when it's time, it's time. So if it's supposed to be now, nothing is going to get in the way of that. You can experience some delays as it is with these things, because, you know, there's a forces thing and all that, and some things will get in the way sometimes. But it's a delay thing. It doesn't mean it stops it, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, I'm like a huge believer of that. So because of that, because of who I am, what I believe, I like, I'm like, yeah, let things exist in their form when the time comes for them to be. Yeah, but absolutely, I would like to see the characters come alive, because I'm also a visual person. So yeah, I would love that. You know, when the time comes, yes, now you've asked me this question, I have to answer. It's not my fault you asked me, but like like a Kunle, I was listening and I heard you guys say Kunle Remi, and I was like, that's really nice. I've worked with Kunle Remi before, and he's such an amazing, amazing talent. And he's charming and sweet, you know. Yeah, he's quite, you know, an okay person. But I'm like, no, we're doing fantasy here. I want Damson Idris. because like if I were like in a room now where we're creating, like, and they're like, oh, let's start talking about
that. So funny.
Film. Right. The production person that I want Damson Idris, they'd be like, with which money? So where's the budget? You want to bring Damson from this place? Do you know what it means? We use, that's the money you're using to make a whole film here. Sometimes you want to pay Damson Idris. So, but like,
I don't know. We should give Damson the book.
Yeah.
If he reads the book, he'll be like, I am Kool-Aid. Like, please.
Yeah. We'll DM you right after this.
John Boyega or Damson. Those are Yoruba men as well. So like, yes. Either John Boyega or Damson Idris. And for BG, there's a Nollywood actress I think is really cool right now. I think she's fantastic. And she's not like as big yet, but like I think she will be because she's actually pretty good. Her name is Bubemi Ejeye. I don't know if you guys know her, but she was in Far From Home, which was quite a popular Netflix title here. She plays the girlfriend or former girlfriend from the streets of the main character. You guys,
let me look this up. Mm-hmm. Does she have Instagram?
Does she what?
Have Instagram?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. She's gorgeous because I don't know if she's still bald at it, because there was a time she just shaved it all up. Mm-hmm. And you have to be bald when you do that, you know, and be able to pull it off. And she can't pull it off. I think she'll make a good that. But like again, this is also fantasy because I'm such a Yoruba person and I like people to speak Yoruba very well. So I mean, there would always be a language barrier because she's not Yoruba. And I've heard John Boyega speak Yoruba and I was like, don't do that again. So so like yeah, I mean they can be trained or whatever, but guys, you asked me, it's not my fault. You asked me I will not
hear Damson speak Yoruba before you.
That's true. Does Damson, can he speak Yoruba? Do we know?
Have you heard him?
I'm not thinking. You guys are asking me reasonable, rational questions. That's not what I'm doing here. I'm just saying things.
Fair enough.
I cannot. Well, like, I don't even have the money to cast Damson right now. I don't know if anyone right now like can do that, but I'm just going to be throwing names around. And Jenny Vivinaji will play their mom, even though she's not acting anything outside her own things in like years. I'm just going to throw her in there as well. She's Tinu Ade for the purpose of this fantastical production that we're all making. She'll kill it. Absolutely 100% she'll kill it. But yeah, like I think those are for like the main guys. I know you guys favor Kole Remi.
I think I said that. No, because he did the other girls on the Netflix.
Oh yeah, in Nigeria Christmas. Oh, it was so good. Yes, absolutely amazing romantic lead, actually. Yeah. Like the best, actually. Yeah, I could see that. It can convince anyone is in love with them. But that's what you want in your romance lead. So yeah, I think
that was a really good Christmas.
I wanted to say to you guys, like, I know you guys didn't ask me that, but like, I was like, when I come here, I must tell you guys, like, about Björn's birthday.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm going to whether they ask me or not. I'll come and explain to them. I came here. That's the only question. That, it wasn't a question. I brought an answer to a question. Whether you ask me or not, I'm going to tell you whether you want to hear it or not. But like, so Biodun literally in Yoruba means, the full name is Abiodun. So basically, you know, the one we birthed in the festive season period. Yeah, so it was intentional to name her that because her birthday was in December. And usually kids born around, you know, Easter, Christmas, or if you're Muslim, all the Eid al-Fitr holidays or whatever. Because, you know, I said earlier, like, as the people were very festive. So, like, that's what Biodun means. So in an earlier draft of the book, actually, there was this huge explanation behind that, like, oh, born during the festive season, this is what it means. So, you know, that would probably not have come across as, why is it suddenly a birthday? When like you guys are like, what birthday? What? I feel like the average person is reading and is expecting like, oh, it must be their birthday around Christmas because she's Biodun. So it's either Christmas or New Year's Day.
Attractive.
So I was like, ah, thank God I'm going on this show when I get in. I did. I'm coming. That's the only one I came here to explain myself. Like, I will like jack the conversation and behave like a Nigerian politician. I will have my way inside and tell you, like, this is what it means. Okay. And that was like, but I mean, I do understand, you know, how we must have also come across like, what's from where to where? You weren't even talking about since yesterday. What do you mean it's your birthday? Yeah.
So yeah, like, I was yeah. like, we were like, oh my god, presents! I said, what's happening? Christmas
came. I thought we missed it. I was like, maybe she mentioned this, and we didn't pay attention. But the real person was Hannah, because Hannah took points off of you because of that. She said, "This will show up."
I said, "I want my wall points back."
Listen, the book is 10 out of 10. Now that you explained it,
foundation. I said, Anna, you must give me back that one that you took because of this birthday. What do you mean you took off one? Like, I'm coming. I will come and tell you people today. There's no way we would have got this call without me explaining, like, oh, this is why her name is that. I mean, I was obviously born in December, but like, because it was very early, not, you know, deep. But if I were, you know, though my parents are not that, they were like that, they're probably not going to, because they like to think that different and cool and all that. But like, yeah. I mean, if I was Biodun, then anyone would have just assumed my birthday is, you know, December 25th, 26th, or around that period. Yeah. Maybe 21st, because I have a friend who is Biodun, but she was born on the 21st of December, for instance. So yeah, it's a period, festive period thing. Anna, I want my 1 point back before the end.
You have business. It's all yours. I'm gonna retract. I'm just gonna go back, remove it, and say it's a 10 out of 10. Which, by the way, I gave the book a 9 out of 10. The first chapter. I said,
I was like, okay, I'll forgive that because I knew you already got like, I think that was a compliment because, you know, if I'm reading a book and I'm like, it doesn't matter, this is already like a 9, you know, like in my head, that's good because you usually don't give 10s because you're like, I don't know what surprises are in front and if I'm gonna like them or whatever. So yeah, like I got that. So yeah, I'm glad you guys enjoyed it. So
no, we absolutely enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. It goes back to what we were saying about how, like, you're just either you get it or you don't. And we didn't get it. We were like, why is it her birthday? Like, and everybody else. Exactly.
You know, it was like, what? From where? Why is she opening presents? Like, we just boom, enter into it. I get that. Yeah. Because, like, realistically, actually, people, especially like women, you know, would, there would have been something, you know, oh, it's my birthday on the whatever. Yeah. Or Kole could even have said it so that she would know, you know, that, yeah, he was like a birthday or whatever. But, yeah, I get it. I think it's also like just a Nigerian, more, you know, like a Nigerian thing, right? People just expect that. But again, you never know with works of art how far they'll travel. So obviously people from different cultural backgrounds will definitely not know that, because what do you mean by I'm not, you know, even I'm guessing some people in Nigeria might not even know that because not everyone is from my tribe, right? So what do you mean I'm not from your tribe and you expect me to know that this is what this means? So yeah, that's valid. But I came here fighting for my 1 point, and
you got your point. You got it.
Okay, I don't know how rushed the time you have. But I only have 2 more questions for you. Okay, so it is the Christmas spirit period, obviously. Favorite Christmas movie, Christmas song, and book. I guess you could say yours if you really want to. And then what other Black romance books should we be reading or looking out for?
Favorite Christmas. Do I have a favorite? I don't know. This is that one where everyone talks about all the time. What's it called now, from 2003 or 4? The classic. Love
Actually?
Love Actually.
Yeah. I thought that was nice. But like, I think if I could claim favorites, it would be those deliciously, ridiculously delicious ones Netflix was so committed to making with Vanessa Hudgens every Christmas for like 2-3 years. Those films, I was like, why do they exist?
Oh, God.
It was like eating like a very decadent chocolate bar, like, or ice cream, cake, and you're like, why is Vanessa Hudgens like 3? She's 3 now? She was 2 in the last week. What do you mean? And then like they all have like this weird questionable accent, you know, like what is going on? This is heaven. God, I love those films. So like if I must say something like is my current favorite Christmas film, then it has to be those. I can't even remember the title for the love of me now, but God, I love those films.
You know what's funny? I always ask myself, who is watching these? Like, why do they keep making them? Who is clicking it so they keep...
It's you. You're the one. You're keeping them in business.
I'm the culprit. I'm the one. I'm the reason those films are coming back. So, like, yeah, it was me. I was I think it was the time I was even like rewatching them, like in anticipation.
Rewatching
is crazy.
Because when they came, you know, there was the third and the final one where they were like starring Vanessa Hudgens and Vanessa Hudgens and Vanessa Hudgens. I was like, yes, give me that ridiculousness because I love it. And usually I get into my Christmas rom-coms like November, because that's around the time you start like seeing them and everything. Yeah, I haven't done that this year because, you know, it's been, you know, very crazy, whatever, but I consume everything. Gosh. Mm-hmm. Like, there was only Kofi Siribo recently, and, you know, like, I saw it. I was like, why is there no Kofi Siribo? What you mean you teased me with it? Anyway, give it to me. I want everything. I consume different races. Gosh, count me in. The Lindsay Lohan one from last year, as it was dropping, I was watching it. So, like, that, I think I'm more like, it's more like my thing in the sense of Christmas rom-com. And, you know, they always have, like, all this cute, you know, titles and everything. I don't care if it's called The Christmas Goat. I want to see it. I'm waiting for it. I want to watch it. Christmas Goat is an insult in Nigeria. Even if you need that, I want to see it. So, yeah. So, like, I think in that sense, I don't have, like, a favorite. I consume everything. What do you mean? They're all my babies. So, I just watch everything.
Yeah.
Like, I love a good Christmas ridiculous rom-com. I want it as ridiculous as possible. Yeah. Christmas song.
Yes.
It has to be the Holy Night Mariah Carey version of it. Mm-hmm. I love it. Like, absolutely. I mean, that would be obvious in the book. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I love that. Yeah. I think that's all you asked, right?
And then books we should look out for.
I know that there's someone called an author, she's an indie author called Lara Karim. She has something coming out, I think maybe later this month or early January. Now what's the title of this book? Now I would share it with you guys on Instagram. This is queer romance. It's not centered, the love stories are centered. It's a really cute, really little book. The chapters, I don't even think the pages are up to 100, to be honest. Okay. But I like how much of an escapist fiction it is. I love how the queer romance was written, you know, really beautiful lesbian love, you know, and how it was centered in that story. A whole lot of Nigerian romance writers are writing, you know, queer fiction in this space. Because, you know, like, we write, in the past, we've seen queer fiction, but with, like, a lot of pain. Because, you know, yeah, you know, you're not, it's actually even a crime to be gay in Nigeria. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, it's also nice to see cool, cute, you know, queer romance, or, you know, have representation in that sense, because especially when you write romance where, you know, you're having happily ever afters and cute things, you know, like, also write them in that as well, you know. So I liked what she did with that. I thought it was really cute. I know that and there's an author called Adesua Nwokedi. She has a romance book coming out next year from we share the same publisher as well. I'm not sure what date that is. I'd written a blog for that. So I liked, you know, what that was. You know, it had like a little bit of old love, you know, there's this new love in there. It's drama and all of that in there, you know. And you know how much of your old love can threaten your new love. I liked that in that sense. Yeah, so that's coming out, I think, maybe July next year. I'm just trying to think of anything now that you guys can see that currently exists, and for the love of me, I can't think of any. So maybe like later when I find, or, you know, sometimes I'm bad with that, by the way, when you ask me stuff on the spot, sometimes I just can't think. But yeah, I'm sure you guys will find, like, a lot of really cute, beautiful Nigerian writes good love stories. We're really good with that.
I think we have Adesua Nwokedi on our TBR for next
year. Oh, fantastic. I think
the book is maybe the one.
We all were indie publishing for years before we got here. This is such a huge milestone, actually, because five, six, 7 years ago, we could not have dreamt this. I'm not even joking. Like, it was not a thing. When I sent in my Efus Jazz, and I really want you guys to read Efus Jazz because I think you'll like it. When I sent that in to Brito Paper 2 years ago, I was being bold, like the audacity of me, because, you know, in mainstream literature in America, you can see that there's a space for romance. But here, they used to necessarily acknowledge us in mainstream. So we're just like in that our cute little corner, writing stuff for, like, you know, certain people and all of that. No one was trying to publish you traditionally, except you wanted to yourself, right? So, like, you know, and I, when I sent that in, like, the editor-in-chief loved it so much, she got me a publisher before she even got back to me. And, like, it gave me the balls to be like, you know, yeah, maybe I have something good here that I can have the nerves to put out there, like, with other people. So it's a really good time now to be in this space where we are being acknowledged. As I always say, we were not writing to be acknowledged by, you know, people. We were writing because we were telling our stories, because we have the right to. But it's also a good thing to be acknowledged and, you know, to be platformed, you know, yeah, by the people who really matter in the game and all that. So I'm sure by the time you guys delve, like, into it, you find, like, it's a gold mine. You know, there's Amaka Azie, and she actually lives, I think she lives abroad, but she's also been consistently doing this for a while. There's Rosemary Okafor, you know, like, there's Martha, like, there is a lot, you know, when you enter into it, you'd see. And the good thing with romance is there's plenty for everybody. You know, you'll find your clean romance, you'll find, you know, like, your spicy ones, you know, you'll find those sorts, right? So before I forget, Emin Bassi, she writes for plus sized, particularly she likes to write plus sized curvy heroines, you know, in her romances, which I think is really nice, because it gives varieties, right? Yeah, not everybody's sexy with nice tits, you know, like, as they would say, or sexy, let me phrase, does not only have skinny and nice tits, you know, sexy can be anything, literally. So, and I like that she took that approach to it. So, yeah, all the girlies, all the romance girlies are killing it. So by the time you dive in, you see things.
Yeah, definitely.
We definitely notice, like, there's a growing audience in the Nigerian, like, scope, like, even your creators sometimes, like, I'm saving and saving and saving. I'm like, we can't read all of these, but, like, there's, I'm just gonna be saving just to see. But yeah, which is nice, like you said, I don't think I saw as many 4 or 5 years ago. So, but I think it's also just a testament to, like, Nigeria has a huge entertainment industry, and it's gonna keep expanding.
Okay. Absolutely. All righty. Thank you so much.
I really loved this. I enjoyed it. Just wanted to say that.
Thank you.
We enjoyed it.
Thank you.
We don't wake up early on a Saturday for anyone.
Yeah. But for you, thank anything.
You so much. Oh my goodness. Wow. Okay. I feel so good. I feel good about that.
But yes, thank you so much for joining us on the Romantic Lit podcast. Please follow us on TikTok, on Instagram, on something else.
YouTube.
And also, YouTube. And yes, and then always email us at romanticlit@gmail.com as well. Send us your book suggestions and all that good stuff. And yeah, we'll talk to you guys next week. And thank you so much, Tamila. Thank you so much.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye. Okay, let me just...